Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mental Health Insights. My name is Craig, and I am here with Pete and Nicole today. So we are going to, this is the After New Year's podcast, and we thought it was a great opportunity to talk about resolutions, goals, and habits, and just kind of helping you with that, and talking a little bit about it from our own perspective professionally, and maybe even just personally a little bit, as we all have our own goals and like what we kind of know about how the brain works and some of the pitfalls and some of the challenges, and how would a therapist kind of make a goal or make a resolution and try to follow through with that. So, well, first things first, let me ask both of you guys while we're right here. Are you guys people that make resolutions and follow through on them, or are you guys kind of like, I'm not really resolution type people?
What I would say is that I've been doing my own personal growth for so long that I'm not a New Year's resolution person. I'm kind of like a... It's a constant iterative process for me that I'm constantly growing and changing and setting new goals and new areas of growth for myself that I work on and following through. And that's kind of how I've chosen to look at it. But I understand for a lot of people that, you know, New Year's has always been traditionally a time of renewal and so on and so forth. So some people do it seasonally as well, you know, with the various changing over the seasons. I have friends who do that.
Yeah.
But for
like
me, it's
top of the month, or you have to start on Mondays,
Equinox, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Because of how the seasons change and what they signify, they use those as transitional periods, I guess.
And we
as
people would just like that. Easy marker. How about you, Nicole?
I'm a little bit like Pete, but what's happened for me more on a personal note is I've gotten a little out of balance. So I have a hard time because I'm an A-type, and I tend to hyper-focus in two or three areas of my life. And so really the new year for me is kind of looking at that balance, being able to look at each category and kind of reframe. So an example would be like the first quarter of my life I spent more physical, like really taking care of my body and nutrition. Second quarter, very academic and more cognitive. And so my third quarter is really to try to integrate that. And so
I tell you what, you guys are such planners with us. I guess I feel just like really typical now, because I like making New Year's resolutions. I like doing that. And I didn't actually wait until New Year's this year, but knowing that and like this, I think what a lot of kids would call me probably basic, right? Where I'm just like, okay, that's my resolution this year. It's actually the same as last year, and that's to get physically fit. And I've been on this progression for, I guess, about 3 years now with it. So every time around New Year's, I'm like, all right, I got my goal this year where I'm going to, like, I have these targets or anything that I'm trying to get to. And it's not, like, really something that I'm like, you know, it's a new quarter, or it's a new season or anything like that. Let me make a different one. I don't know. So I guess maybe I'm like the typical person where it's like, okay, I'm going to try to get healthy now, or I'm going to try to like work out or exercise.
Well, what you said is interesting because you already have some of the habits in place. So I think for some people, you know, if you already have some habits lined up, it's easier to, it's called chunking or putting, associating a new habit with a habit you already have makes it more effective. But I think if you're starting from a baseline, you know, for example, I've worked and went to school and had so many things going on in my life, I haven't had that time to implement some of the physical things that I did before. So I have to start from rock bottom again because I've lost all of that momentum. So kind of getting started might have a little different approach than what you would have with what you're already building.
You used a term I want to come back to, chunking, right? So a lot of us have a hard time following through with different goals or plans that we have. And chunking is a nice way to kind of give yourself a leg up on it. And I was hoping you'd just talk to us a little bit about chunking.
So chunking helps because, so it's the triune brain. Let's go back to that for those of you who didn't listen to some of the other podcasts. There's three layers of the brain. And when you think about the subconscious layer or the lizard brain, that fight or flight and that survival, that's where our habits really stick. It's a somatic experience. So a lot of people, you know, let's say you're working on losing weight or fitness. If there's a lot of pain or there's been an injury, there's a fear there. So you'd address it at that level of the brain when you're chunking. So we'd want to come, you know, get underneath some of the stuff mm-hmm. before you start chunking. Then in the middle would be like the mammalian brain, or we'll call it monkey brain if you want. And so that's kind of that limbic system, that train pattern from before. So if we can work off of a habit you already have, you know, if you were in the military perhaps and you were disciplined at another time in your life, my veterans do really well when I tap into that level of the brain as far as chunking. Let's go back to military days. What was effective before? What did that look like for you? And so we can come up with a strategy for that. And then the prefrontal cortex is just consciously kind of thinking of that motivational interviewing. You know, when you think about, okay, for me, the last couple months, I've been kind of in the pre-contemplation, like, what am I really willing to give up? What's realistic, right? Like, okay, I can implement some positive things, and then I'm willing to take a few things out. And I practiced that for a while, kind of like you did, before I went all the way in for the new year. So when I'm thinking of chunking, I'm thinking, what have I been doing and what would I be willing to do? So I would connect things. So in the morning, routine is the most important. That's the best time to change your habits, statistically, as far as research goes. So that would be really helpful. If you get up and brush your teeth, you know, you drink your water, I'm starting to exercise in the morning. I do Tai Chi every day for 15 minutes. I've brought weights into the office. You know, I'm chunking some things together that I normally would do, and I just add it in.
Well, and whenever you're chunking, you're using things that you might already be doing, right? So if I brush my teeth in the morning, mm-hmm. now I'm placing a water cup by it so that I'm going to drink the water. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm used to brushing my teeth and drinking the water, now I'm going to put my workout shoes right next to there, yeah. right? Uh-huh. So that it's easier for me to do it. And that chunking process makes it easier to add something to that habit. I think that I like to think of chunking as a, what's the best way to say? It's almost like a shortcut mm-hmm. a lot of times, right? If I don't like doing something, but there's already something I'm doing. So like me, I'm a big audiobook person, right? So if there's an audiobook I'm really into, I will try to make it so that I have to do things that are not as pleasant while I'm doing that, like while I'm listening to that audiobook, because it makes it easier for me to do that. And that helps kind of balance it out. So if I know that I'm listening to an audiobook, let's say I listen to it in the evenings, right? I will save for the evenings the more unpleasant tasks that I have to do, because I know that I'm going to be listening to an audiobook during that, and I get excited for it, right? Mm-hmm. My body's already ready for it. I'm like thinking about, all right, this is the story that I'm already into. Mm-hmm. And then it's easier for me to do that because my body, my brain, they're already prepped for that time. Like, ooh, this is going to be the time of listening. I want to find out what's happening in the story next. Chunking is really something that's amazing. And
the pleasure was there because, again, mm-hmm. it tapped into that social brain. So you were tapping into the bottom and the midbrain. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's so effective. And by the time you've developed that habit, it's habitual and there's pleasure. So it's a dopamine reward by then cognitively, it's also you're thinking about it because we think about a lot of things, but the willpower is not there to actually, you know, activate what we want to do.
That's interesting because when you were talking, I want to touch on just the willpower piece. What I like about the morning is that our willpower has reserve tank. And the more stressed we are, the more things we have going on, the more energy we expend on willpower throughout the course of the day, which is why morning is such an ideal time to add in new habits. We typically have more reserves, if you will, because the day's just starting out. We haven't experienced a lot of stress, a lot of things challenging our willpower throughout the day, so we have more energy to combat some of the resistance we may have to new habits. So I really like that idea around chunking in the morning. But as you were talking about your example, Craig, and listening to you, Nicole, what what I was getting was just how coupling the idea of the pleasure that you're getting from that mm-hmm. can help to reduce the resistance we may have later in the day. It's a great strategy to combat what may be a time of day where we may have not only more resistance, but less willpower to combat that resistance because of the time of day and the way our energy gets expended throughout the day and navigating the world at large. Mm-hmm. So I really like that idea.
Well, coupling is a great technique to use. Like I said, I use it with the reading and like setting up times. But coupling is a great thing to use whenever it can be something that's like low motivation or hard to do. but it's also something that's easy to set up during certain times, right? So like during this time, I normally eat, right? And if you know that like during this time that you normally eat, then I can do some other task that's very similar to that or anything like that because it's already coupled with the time. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, it's hard because they don't couple things with time or anything. You couple things with activities, which is completely fine too, right? Mm-hmm. Like if I'm in the office, then it might be easier for me to couple doing like specific type of work, right? So a lot of times when people are like writers or anything, they have to couple being in the office for a certain amount of time, like setting aside that block of time and in a specific place in order to help them to be more productive. So they are pairing those two things to help enhance their ability to perform, right? Which is a lot of things that athletes do too in certain things, or they have certain processes that they go through, mm-hmm. which is another thing that's really important.
Ritual.
Yes. Developing that ritual to make it so you kind of almost get into the zone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful thing whenever you can take advantage of that. I mean, I think baseball is something that's really, I think of all the time, right? People are always very mm-hmm. superstitious about it. So it's like, oh, I got to do these very specific things.
Right. No, and what I like about the coupling idea and the way you're explaining it was very similar to what Nicole was talking about earlier about the lizard brain. That mm-hmm. when we start coupling things, we're actually getting deeper into the brain. We're getting into the experience of it. And we have all kinds of things that are coupled. But when we can get into that space, eventually what it does is it embeds it at that lower brain level where it actually becomes a habit because it's mm-hmm. an experience. And once the association gets made over time, it takes much better rather than it being separated out. The more coupled it is with pleasant experiences, the easier it is to integrate at the body level, which is where things, the habit actually resides in the nervous system. It's about the actual experience. It becomes implicit memory. It goes from explicit and more cognitive to more implicit and part of just the daily routine. And the faster we can get it there, the more the habit's going to really sit and take.
And that's why you see, you know, 90% of people not following through with their resolutions. So it's really more about thinking intention mm-hmm. and ways to work smarter than harder, having it planned, setting a timer. A lot of my people with ADHD have a hard time, as well as myself. Oh, I set timers for a lot of things. And then you build that momentum is kind of what I heard you speaking of. And so mm-hmm. I think all of those kind of help you anchor that in as you're working that bottom-up processing in the brain. And so if you wanted a real strategy that's going to work at any habits that you have, you really have to incorporate that subconscious, that subliminal level, which is what we do with neuro-linguistic programming, is really go in. Even at night, I might listen to like guided imagery, you know, for whatever I'm doing to go into that brain level, at that subconscious level or that mm-hmm. mammalian brain and the limbic all the way through before I'm cognitively thinking about it. So I'm working both angles of it. So, you know how we burn the candle at both ends? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that with a habit. You got to get it in all the different layers or you're going to find yourself falling short. And it's not about motivation or willpower. It's just about the human capacity and understanding how all of these, you know, components work together.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I want to come back to talk about habit for a second. So basically, habit makes up almost all the things that we do. And it's a very simple thing called the habit loop, right? So a habit loop is initiated by a trigger. And once the trigger is hit, or the cue, depending on what you want to call it, you will go through a process. And the process eventually becomes unconscious, which is what you want. Because when it's unconscious, it takes zero willpower. Mm-hmm. But also, you can then focus your energy on other things too. So a great example of this, and this is the example I always use with my clients. I ask them, I go, hey, whenever you came in today, did you think about sitting down on that chair? Like, did you think about like lowering yourself into it? And they're like, no. They go, yeah, you didn't have to because you've sat in chairs thousands of times, right? So your brain's like, oh, cue, there's a chair. I would like to sit in it, right? So you unconsciously go through the process of sitting in it without having to be like, all right, I got to be really careful with this. Or another thing is riding a bike. Once you get on a bike, if you've been on a bike before and for a while, like you just, your unconscious brain's like, don't worry, I got this, right? You don't have to pay attention to this. Then eventually you can ride around a bike without your hands or, you know, text on your phone while you're on the bike or whatever you want to do that's going to cause danger to yourself, right? But it becomes easier for you to do those things. So you go through that process, which is the unconscious part, and then it ends, right? Then the cycle ends, and then you wait for the trigger to happen again. So the challenge a lot of times is that whenever we don't present a clear cue, it's harder for something to take place. It's harder for us to develop a habit, right? So we always want to develop a clear cue. So I'll give you guys an example, right? I told you guys that one of the habits that I have is exercising, and it's like very health focused. So I know that the best time for me to exercise is right in between 9 and 10 a.m. That is like 90% of the time whenever I exercise, it's between 9 and 10 a.m. So you know what? Today, I didn't get the chance to exercise between 9 and 10 a.m. because I had a consultation group that I went to. So I have not exercised yet today. So I know that after I get done with this, I got to go home and exercise. And I can already feel the dread in me having to go home and exercise, because it's like I've already missed the cue, right? So now I will have to burn willpower,
right,
to have myself go and do that, because I've already missed that type of habit. Now, once I get into the loop and I'm actually exercising, then it becomes easier. But I'm going to have to burn stuff on the, you know, basically on the front end with this, no matter what. Like I said, I can already feel it in me. I'm like, oh gosh, I already missed the window. But that's what I've always been used to doing. So clear cues and outlining clear cues for new habits you're forming, super key to helping make things easier.
I agree completely. And what, Nikki, you were talking about earlier, you know, the three levels of the brain. A lot of times in working with clients and helping them to work through things like this, if they're struggling with setting up the initial, you know, loop, if you will, that even though they're trying to create the trigger, but they're having resistance, I always start at the top and work my way down. Where consciously, you know, what's the thought, what's going on, and then we start working deeper in. So what's the feelings, what's going on, and then more deeper, how can we figure out what's the unconscious driver here that's getting in the way?
Mm-hmm.
So getting from the top down as a way to understand what's going on or what's getting in the way, where the willpower is getting burnt up, is a good thing along the way. Understanding that if people are having difficulty with that part of the process, I like to work from that part down, because we typically understand things from the top down, not from the bottom up. That's kind of how we conceptualize or work on things or make changes. And then developing strategies along the way to work with those three different parts of the brain, getting an accountability partner, you know, again, setting up the ritual, mm-hmm. and getting support and those kinds of things, and understanding our thought process.
Well, I love what you both said, because what I hear is obstacles. And I think that's why people don't really come through with the habits. That's why, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about how long it takes to take, you know, build a habit. It's really not 21 or 30 days like we think. It can happen, but it's getting, you know, underneath those barriers or obstacles. You know that's going to be a dread, so you already have a plan in place. So had you not, it's very easy to miss today. And so even if we did miss today, the third backup.
I'm coming up with reasons why I don't need to do it today.
The mind, right, you know, my clients tell me your mind works against you. It's like it's trying to keep you from doing what you should
Pete's
do.
Pete's over here talking about, like, you have to look at them unconscious things. I'm like, oh no, they're fully conscious for me right now. I'm very much aware of that part of me, especially since I just had a Dr. Pepper over here, right? So I know that that part's like, oh, like you already messed up today. You already had your Dr. Pepper. You don't need to do that. And those are then obstacles that get placed in the way of me actually completing my goal, right? And you know what? If I didn't do it today, guess what? Now I start to create another habit loop that I then have to contend with, because if I continued to do that, I'm like, well, I didn't work out yesterday. Like, why would I need to work out today?
I can't do it. I always go back to the old habit. That's why people revert back. Yeah, it's that feedback loop. That's really important.
Yeah, and I think that gets into the idea of, first of all, of when setting goals, resolutions, whatever you want to call it, what I like to tell clients and what I think of myself is breaking it down into smaller parts. So you said getting healthy. So a lot of times people will make a resolution, oh, I want to get healthy. But then, okay, what does healthy mean? What does that really look like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or I want to get fit, or I want to, you know, be more active or whatever. And I think it's important to break it down into as small a part as possible, so that you can build in what's the first step, and then working on that piece and letting the rest go. Because people tend to overwhelm themselves with, okay, I got to get healthy. So that means I got to eat better. I got to exercise more. I got to sleep more. And already now you've had three major categories of things you're going to do. And the possibility of even one of them succeeding is significantly reduced because we've added three major areas within a larger category. And it gets very convoluted because at the body level, changing a habit, the smaller step that we have, the more likely we are to integrate it. Mm-hmm. And if we have too many goals, our willpower gets burnt up too quick. And again, people mm-hmm. fail within the first 90 days mm-hmm. because they're trying to do too many things at one time. Change is extremely difficult. It goes against our natural
biology.
Tendencies. Yeah, yeah, we resist change just naturally. Mm-hmm. So it's important to take it as small as steps as possible and just focus on that piece. And even though it seems like, oh, well, in that case, it's going to take me all year just to get this done. So maybe it does. That's okay. We're better off picking one or two goals and working on them for 60 to 90 days and getting success with them and then going to the next step than trying to do 5 or 10 different things and failing at all of them. Because every little success sets the table for the next success that comes afterwards.
Yeah, and that's important when you think of dopamine and, you know, building to that next level. We need to give many rewards. And I love, you know, a lot of the programs now when you go out, you know, fitness programs and things, there's accountability with a partner.
Mm-hmm.
It's competition, so it's incorporating social engagement.
Right.
Then you've got another layer of that to say most improved. And that's more important than actually achieving the big goal. We need to give ourselves some kind of positive kudos, and that doesn't mean a piece of cake after you've lost 10 pounds, right?
Darn
so, that's another little obstacle, but you really mm-hmm. want to think about, you know, the motivation behind this stuff. And
right.
there was another piece that you said with the momentum and anchoring. It slipped my mind, but it was really important when you think of that process. And so we don't revert back. People always revert back to the old program. So you have to integrate all three parts of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I've not been a success with my food. I get tired. My threshold is you know, gone by the time it's the evening, and I'm going to sneak a Dr. Pepper. So this time I've prepared my mind a little bit better, and I have a measurable strategic plan of how I'm going
right.
to do it. So I'm replacing it with tea. I'm replacing it with infusing, you know, fruits or something in my water when I'm craving
that's
something
exactly
different.
Exactly what my mom did. And I think that, like, for years, right?
Yeah.
I think that's what everyone's like, all right, I'm going to eat healthier. So I'm going to completely change my diet. It's like, whoa. You really should not
yep.
do that.
No, please don't do that.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, take out one thing at
right.
a time. Right?
And replace
like
it with something else.
Or like the,
mm-hmm.
did you say to replace with donuts?
And replace it with something else.
Oh, I thought you said to replace with donuts.
No.
I was like, oh, gosh.
No. You replace
no
it with
donuts.
Something. Yeah, just like what Nicole was saying, you replace it with something else. You take something out and replace
something more positive.
Hey, I love
donuts, though, so maybe I can.
Well, you could replace it with donuts, but yeah.
And, you know, one other piece of that is, you know, before you start taking everything away, this is what we do in therapy or with habits
right.
or anything, add new good things in first.
Yes.
Then start pulling some things away, because then you have more ability and flexibility and adaptability to be able to sit in that and
right.
make more progress for those little layers, or, you know, building the momentum towards the habit that you want to have. And it gets into, like Pete talked about, implicit memory, then becomes procedural, like the chair.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we're just operating. We're doing it. We don't think about it. We don't think about driving the car or sitting in a chair.
Mm-hmm.
We're not thinking about Dr. Pepper. It's not going to be a problem to choose that mm-hmm. because I've already have a plan in place. I'm not going to be
it's
craving
almost like
that.
Think of it like an investment. The money that you're putting away right now, eventually it's going to be making money for you, and you're not even going to be thinking about it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's like that whenever you're developing a habit loop, right? You got to put in the effort on the front end. And if you take it small step at a time, it becomes easier for that to become integrated, and it becomes easier for that to go into the unconscious, which is really what you want, because then you don't have to spend any energy on it.
That's right.
Right. And now I think that we should make special mention. There are rare people out there that they can make huge shifts and they could stick to it for a long time. And that is not typical.
That's correct.
Right. But I do want to make special mention, because everyone seems to know that person that they just made this huge lifestyle change and they seem to stick to it. And why can't I do that? Well, they're a freak of nature. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. That is not standard for most people. And I like to say that specifically because I know that a lot of people had that view of, like, substance abuse, right? Well, you know, my grandpa is one of these people that he smoked for years, and then the research came out, and he goes, well, it's irrefutable right now. Like, there is nothing good about cigarettes. And he threw his pack away, and he never touched it since.
Right.
That is extremely rare that something like that happened,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, people look at that, and they may be like, well, why can't other people do that? And because most people are not wired that way, right? Or, you know, for him, he was already in that place where he was setting things up, right? That's there's another thing that is important, right? We're talking about building habits here, but there's another thing that you can do to help institute habits called habit substitution. So that's actually where you take a cue that you already know for a habit that you don't want, and every time the cue is placed, you replace it with something else, right? So a lot of times people do this with habits they don't like. For example, substance use. Let's use cigarettes, for instance, right? Every time after I finish a meal, I smoke a cigarette. So the cue would be at the end of the meal, right? So I know that at the end of the meal, I got to do something that is maybe similar to smoking, but not quite that, right? So I'm going to go outside and I'm going to chew a piece of gum, right? So you start to substitute that habit to make it easy. And you can do this with new habits that you want to form too, right? So let's say that we go back to talking about like exercising in the morning, right? So you brush your teeth, you got the water, you got your running shoes on there, and you're like, oh gosh, like actually in the morning, something changed, and now I'm going to, let's say besides like running or anything, I gotta make my meal first, and then I'm gonna run. Okay, that's fine. Then right after the water, you go and do that right away. It'll be easier to switch that habit now because you've already let up and you already let the cue and everything take place, and then you immediately go and do that, and you can switch those habits easier. So it's like a, but that's something that you already have to have the habit in place. It's really tricky. But it's also really fun. You can kind of like mess with yourself. I like substituting habits. But
I did something a little radical a few years ago. I had a friend of mine, Kevin, that's a hypnotist, and I asked him to help me with the cookies because that was a problem when I worked at another location. Mm-hmm. And so they were always available. And so I didn't have that habit before. But after this environment, I started noticing that became a habit. And so I had
wanting cookies all the time?
Yeah, all the time because they're always available. Like fresh bake, everything's magnificent. Or MacArthur's Bakery, they're always bringing in sweets. And so that's a weakness for me. So I had him couple certain particular sweets with negative connotations at a subconscious level. So every time I would have that craving, because it's physiological, mm-hmm. this association of something negative would come up, whether that's a dumpster or ashtray, cigarettes or something really negative. And so that's a more radical approach, but you could do that even at a subconscious level, like make an association. So if you're thinking, oh, I love bacon, I want to eat that, and you have heart disease, you might picture or imagine arteriosclerosis where it's being clogged or your stomach is heavy or something negative that you don't like, so you can visualize what you do want. Sometimes that can help at the subconscious level too when you think of the next mm-hmm. layer of that.
What you're talking about right there is kind of like an aversion, and which is really an effective type of therapy for substance abuse counseling, right? Like a lot of times when people are trying to quit cigarettes, you create a new habit that is an aversion. Whenever you're smoking, you pay specific attention to the taste of the cigarette, because usually that's something that gets edited out of your brain. And a lot of times as people focus on the taste and they just sit there and really focus on it, the cue is lighting up the cigarette and taking the first drag. And then you start to focus and you try and try and try and you focus. It tastes like crap, right? So like people eventually get an aversion to it, mm-hmm. right? Or you hear about parents that are like, oh, you smoke cigarettes? Well, now I'm going to make you smoke packs until you like throw up.
Eat the cigarette.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like creating that aversion, which is actually very effective. Look,
is that similar to having a kid wash his mouth out with soap?
Yeah.
These things are not appropriate in modern day.
That is a torturous parent right there. I don't wash your mouth out. I'm going to give you the soap and make you wash out your
mouth. No, but I like what you're saying. And you know, as Nicole, you were talking about it too, that's exactly what came up to me, is the idea of aversion. And I think, again, if you also then, as you develop the aversion, also create a positive association with something that you want, now you're not only creating a you're decoupling the original, but you're now recoupling or trying to couple a newer, pleasant implicit memory to go with where you want to go or what, how you see yourself or the outcome that you're looking for, some visualization. And so you're simultaneously decoupling something and coupling something more positive or pleasant with it. It's a substitution. It has more strength to it. It really is a way to break the old habit and incorporate the new
one. Well, it's firing and wiring a new neural network for you to operate off of. And so the less time we use the old negative network, the more we reinforce this positive. And so in my mind, that's what I'm always thinking as I'm trying to develop the new habit. And when we think of substance or food or some other addiction type things that people have, you know, it's really important to think of the layers because there's a physiological craving. And once that goes, the next layers are really much easier to combat than those first levels of craving because it's a biological drive and it's so primitive. You know, when you think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you think about, okay, food, water, shelter. So that's more difficult than someone with drugs. You can just stop smoking pot or stop, you know, using cocaine, but you have to eat. So I think, you know, eating disorders and some of those things where you still have to incorporate that in your life can be really challenging. So I do want to mention that these tactics and techniques are probably not as simple for somebody that maybe has, you know, more complex difficulty.
Well, I think that even, I mean, this is getting a little bit away from like setting resolutions or anything, but the unconscious part that makes it so difficult is like that's the beautiful thing when you set a habit that you want is the unconscious part makes it easy. But that's the devastating part about a habit you don't want is it's also unconscious. And there's wonderful research about it with gambling addiction that shows how people, there is no awareness whenever they are gambling. And it actually really becomes a question, like, is this person voluntarily doing this? And the answer is no, they're not actually doing it. But, you know, courts and lobbyists and, like, special interest would argue against that, right? There's a lot of money in the gambling industry. But whenever we develop those habits, there's actually really not a lot of choice. There's not a lot of room for that. And it takes a lot of self-awareness and a lot of work around it to actually even create the space to allow you to make any type of choice with that. Mm-hmm. But that's why this can also be so powerful and why what we were talking about earlier, especially what Pete was talking about, like taking the small steps, as you invest in those small steps and you invest in the taking the small task, you know, breaking it down like Pete was talking about and incorporating that into a habit, it can have huge yields for the rest of your life. And I think that we do really get caught up in go big or go home type thing. Like, I'm going to make these big goals and these big resolutions. Mm-hmm. And we do not take the time to create the infrastructure, right? It's like, let's build a skyscraper, but we're going to be really cheap on the materials for like the foundation of the building, right? nobody wants to go to the top floor of that skyscraper or even the bottom floor. But, yeah. So it becomes really hard because we have to be really realistic. And like we were talking about even before we got on here, and Nicole mentioned it a little bit, is that we have this idea, what is it, the 21 days or whatever, the 21 days is what it takes to form a habit. And I can't remember, what did you say that the research actually indicates?
Yeah, so the original 21 days came from Psycho-Cybernetics. I can't remember the gentleman's name off the top of my head anyway. But he said it takes a minimum of 21 days, but 21 days, and this is back in the 60s, if I remember correctly.
So people were like, oh, okay, well, I can do the minimum.
I can, that's right. So, but it became conventional wisdom that it takes 21 days to create a new habit, and that's what self-help said for so long. But in the last 10, 12 years, what we've found is that there's a reason, first of all, that wasn't working successfully consistently, is that when more research was done, that it actually takes between 18 and 254 days to create a new habit. And there's so many variables in there that are involved, some of which we've been talking about, how big the habit is that we're trying to change, what layer, whether it's something that's more addictive or more runs to the deeper part of the brain versus something that's just an everyday kind of thing that I want to do. What they landed on was the average is 66 days to create a new habit. So we're talking roughly 2 months, give or take. Is the average, and then you have to factor in, as I said, how difficult the habit is that we're trying to break? Is it something that's really, really hard that I've been trying to do for a very long time and have a really difficult time doing this? Or is this something that's very low hanging fruit? You know, simply, like you said, adding a glass of water in when I'm brushing my teeth. Well, that's probably not that difficult because you're just setting it there. You're creating a ritual. You do that for 30 to 60 days. There's a good chance that every day it's going to be built in. But when you're talking
about... All of a sudden you're going to wake up and be thirsty.
That's right.
Want a glass of water.
Right. But when you're talking about quitting smoking, there's all kinds of complicated layers to the ritual of smoking, the habits that are involved in it, and in a lot of cases, the psychological and emotional impacts of why that ritual has permeated so much of a person's life, that there's a lot more involved into untangling and decoupling all of the different pieces that are related to quitting smoking. Now, you might be able to throw the pack away, but then there's going to be all of these cravings and rituals that are involved in, not just as we were talking earlier, when I get done eating, I have a cigarette. When I get stressed, I have a cigarette.
I'm in the car,
when I go to a bar with friends, or when I sit down with certain people who are smoking, there's very, very implicit rituals involved around smoking that make it a very, very complicated thing to do, to just throw away and then 30 days or 21 days just stop.
Absolutely. That's what I was thinking earlier when we think about food or addiction or some of these things, Pete, what you're talking about. There's cognitive entanglement, emotional, spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
It's the meaning behind these things. And then you have all these adaptive things. So it's almost entangled in all kinds of networks that we have to kind of disentangle a little bit at a time.
A little at a time.
Delaying gratification and being motivated is not enough. Neither is small measurable steps. I mean, that's a great part, but if it's more complex, I think it's really important to talk to a professional to help them, you know, help you untangle these things. You know, I do a lot of, I love that word because I just think of roots of a tree like we talked about before, and I think it just gets enmeshed in all kinds of areas of people's lives that they're not aware of. Unless we start asking the right questions and really looking at our own habits, where did that even come from? Getting curious about the how and when did this develop? And what people find is the first time they did something, there was some kind of traumatic event or some kind of a positive event, there was some kind of chemical charge that made that association with whatever that habit is. So I think really looking at the root of these things as we navigate and find new ways to develop positive habits.
So what we're saying is, after every time that you do something that you want to do, eat like a bowl of sugar to create a good... No, I'm joking. Don't do that. No, actually, while you guys are talking about this, I was sitting here thinking to myself, if I'm someone that's listening to this, something that I might be curious about is, what are some of these things that are like habit killers, right, that make it tremendously more difficult to form a habit? And as I was thinking about this, the first one just kind of dawned to my mind. Like, first of all, we need to be realistic about whenever we're setting these goals, like we've talked about earlier. And another thing is, like, we just have to be real with where we're at, right? If I am someone that chronically does not get a good amount of sleep, I might have to cut the steps that I'm taking even smaller because I'm already starting out with less gas in the tank.
Yeah.
Right. If I'm someone that has a horrendous time eating and changing my diet, this is already a problem area. I know I might have to cut the stuff even smaller. So being realistic with yourself and where you're at whenever you're making goals, and just knowing that there are so many things, like sleep is such a big part of if we even have the fortitude to start to make some of these changes. And whenever we don't have as much fortitude there, like, sometimes you have to address the lower energy areas first, right? Or you have to start forming new habits around there. It's really important because a lot of times people will go and jump into things and we will get this idea that, well, like, I'm just not a person that is capable of this. And from anything that we know about human beings, that is not true. Like, we are capable of so much, we're capable of so much change and so much of our own, like, customization and how we do things, that sometimes it is a lack of, I guess I almost want to say a lack of power, right? A lack of willpower or whatever you might call it, that makes it hard for us to start to form the habit. So if you're trying to form a habit and you keep failing at it, even you're cutting it small, then you may have to look at, all right, what is it that is sapping my ability to do this? What is this obstacle? Is it my sleep? Is it my diet? Do I have too much on my plate? Is it this like chronic stress or depression or anxiety, whatever it may be? And make sure that if one of those things are going on, you might actually have to address that part before you would be able to start taking some of the steps that you're wanting to. Now, that being said, most people, they can start to form small habits before they would run into something like that. And but I want to let people know that, because you may start to run up and you may feel like you're hitting a wall. And if you are, that's normal. People run into that. People hit that. And a lot of times it's because there's something that's going on that's kind of like draining our willpower, or draining the kind of gas in the tank that we might have to be able to do that.
I think that's so important, because that's why you see people fail repeatedly at the same thing. Mm-hmm. And to address those underlying issues, really help that person not have the shame and guilt about why you weren't a success. Let's look at the why and the how, going back to that always, and looking at how can we be a success this time? How is it the same and how is it mm-hmm. different? Those are kind of the basic neuro type things that we would use in any therapeutic, you know, application yeah. when we're looking at habits or thinking or these layers of the brain. Those are some of the basic core things that Pete and I use, I know, in practice.
Yeah, for mm-hmm. some reason, whenever I'm talking about this, I'm just really getting a strong thought about like business owners right now, right? Whereas there's a tremendous amount of stress that comes along with that. And there's a tremendous amount of times where failure can happen. And a lot of discouragement can happen. So if you're trying to start up new habits around your business or productivity or anything like that, it could be something that's really hard, and it could be something that comes extremely derailing. And why it's so important to take these small incremental steps, and if you keep finding out, like for example, I have a goal at some point in my life, I want to write a book, right? I've wanted to do this for a really long time. And about 2 or 3 years ago, I was like, okay, I'm going to set a goal. I'm going to write for an hour a day. And I did it for a good amount of time, right? And then started slipping away. Now it's only a half hour because like I have less time or anything. This is before I had a kid, so it was easier for me to set the stuff up, right? And slowly, it just starts falling away, and then I end up feeling awful about it. Well, now I get to this part of me that's like, well, maybe I'll just never get it done, right? Maybe I'm just not the type of person that can do that. Wrong. What was happening for me is like, even as I look back on it now, what happened for me is I was just scheduling clients earlier in the day, so I had less time to be able to do this, and I would have actually had to wake up earlier. Well, guess what happened whenever I woke up earlier? I was really tired. And what happens when you wake up really tired? It's really hard to get myself to sit down and write for an hour or type for an hour or anything like that. So it didn't actually have to do as much with the goal that I had set for myself. I was draining myself at the other end, right? I was kicking the legs out from under the sleep that I needed to be able to support this thing that I was doing, right? So it's really important for us, like whenever we're juggling things, to take other things and take other things into consideration whenever we find out that we are having a really hard time around setting those goals. And even if we cut them smaller, right? Like, so it would have been wise for me, or even be wise for me now. It's like, well, an hour's too much. Let's try a half hour, right? All right, a half hour's too much. Well, I'm going to do 15 minutes, right? 15 minutes hard. All right, I'm going to do like, 10. So no matter what, trying to cut it smaller if you're having a harder and harder time doing it, because then once I get the habit down, then it becomes easier to add to it.
Yep, you can increase it. Well, and something we touched on earlier that I think can also help with a lot of this is the accountability partner and or partners. If you're seeing a professional, whether it's a coach, a therapist, or mentor or something like that, I think that's great. But in addition to that, what I always encourage people to do is to get at least one or two people where ideally you're helping each other, supporting each other in your goals. And you set a couple of ground rules, which are that it's encouraging and not shaming. It is about support and not blame or criticism. So because part of the reward is, first of all, validating that it's hard. Secondly, understanding that failure is a part of the process. And thirdly, it's about building each other up and engaging that social engagement system, which creates a reward that even though I'm not where I want to be or today I missed out, that doesn't mean that I failed at my goal. And helping us to overcome that inner voice that always wants to put us down for failure. The master has failed more times than the apprentice has even tried. I love that saying because to me, in order to master anything, we have to fail over and over and over again. And part of building a new habit is failing at it. As you said earlier, yeah, there are some people that can just, okay, today's the day, I'm done, and I moved on. But that's not the typical. All of us are going to fail at anything we set out to do, any endeavor. The most elite athletes have failed numerous times before they become masterful. Mm-hmm. So, and they've had coaches, mentors, other teammates who constantly build them up, challenge them, encourage them. People are more successful when they get encouraging support around their failures rather than getting shamed. That will only take us so far. Shame and the drive for competition only will take us so far before eventually we collapse under the weight of it because at some point, it has diminishing returns.
Mm-hmm. It does. It's like the chair being knocked out as you talk about that. When I think of shame or criticism, many people that even develop some of these addictions or problems, that's where the original source or the root of the difficulty mm-hmm. came from. So disentangling that, having that support, and someone saying, well, you know, maybe that was true in that moment, but in this moment, it's okay. And it made sense why you did that before. We're not going to shame that. It's in the past. But here's what we can do going forward. And you made great strides. And every time you fail, you learned a new technique. It's kind of like what we talked mm-hmm. about before the podcast started. I don't know if you want to share a little bit about your game. I thought that was a great analogy.
Which game?
The game that you were playing and epidemic game.
Oh, yeah. No, this game called The Island. And it's a cooperative strategy game, and the island is slowly sinking while you are trying to figure out how to get these four treasures and then fly off the island. Well, me and this one client, I remember I was very fond of them, actually, or I am very fond of them, teenager, brilliant, and we're like, hey, like, we want to beat this on the hardest setting. And we must have lost this thing 50-some odd times before we finally beat it. And that 50-something times, we learned so much from it. We can learn so much from whenever we're trying to set up these habits and whenever things are not working so that we can still accomplish the goal and be aware of the pitfalls that end up showing up or being aware of the block or being aware of the obstacle so that I can plan for it, right? So that you can plan for it. Because, I mean, really, at any time, right, you could have a habit that is set up and going great, and then something comes and something happens and makes it hard and it can disrupt it. So the quicker and quicker you can identify some of the blocks that happen, the quicker and quicker you can identify some of the obstacles and make a plan, the better and better off you are. And like even just listening to, or even just kind of being here while we're talking about this, something like this actually really excites me. The idea of making these small steps into doing anything, because I know this is for you guys too, like any of the work that we do with our clients, we get to sit there and we get to see those small steps and we get to bear witness to this process working. And I think that's why maybe it's a little bit easier for us therapists sitting here talking to you about this, because we have got to bear witness to it for hundreds and thousands of sessions of clients putting in the work and taking those small steps. So whenever we talk about this being able to work, it's not from our own personal endeavors. It's not because we're perfect at this, right? We're in the same boat as you trying to figure this out, but we have seen it work with other people. We've seen it work to some success in our own lives. We know that it works as far as the research goes. And like, it's tough, it's hard. That's why taking the small steps, being realistic with it, like finding someone that's accountable, having that like social connection, that social kind of goal to go forward. And whenever things go bad, that's okay, right? Regroup and keep going. And if you need to cut it smaller, that's fine, because you want to get the cue and get the habit going so that it becomes automatic. And then you can continue to build on from there, right? I start to think of meditation, right? Oh, you start out very small, amount, yeah, right?
2 minutes, 3 minutes, mm-hmm. 5 minutes.
And then
you go to 8 or 10 and keep mm-hmm. building it. Yeah, and I think you make a great point, Craig. It's part of the reason why people engage someone like us in the kind of work we do, because what we do is we actually witness and reflect that back incrementally, that positive feedback, which is why it's so important to have somebody outside of that kind of formal environment to continue to reinforce it, because our own inner voice, we are always going to be our own worst critic. Mm-hmm. And having somebody else to reflect an outside perspective to show us the incremental progress that we've made really, really reinforces the efforts that we're making and adds to that sense of motivation and reward that we're looking for to really zoom out. Because we can be too much in the weeds with, well, I missed three times this week, so I might as well just let it go. No, wait a minute. You're up to 4 days a week consistently, and you know, that's only the last week or two. You were 4 days. Prior to that, you were in 5 or 6 days a week you were keeping up with this. Oh, wow, I never thought of that. Mm-hmm. Great, thanks for telling me. Yeah, okay, now I'm feeling better about it. You know, I don't have to. I don't have to give it up.
That's a good point when you're thinking about feelings, because they can be so strong in the moment, and we need to learn to override those feelings. And our core language or our core beliefs that we've heard those recordings from our parents or our teachers, coaches, or our own negative self-talk, we want to be really careful to remember that failure is an opportunity to grow and learn. And that was a really hard shift in my personal life to really look at that. Mm-hmm. The more times I fail, the more comfortable I get, and the faster I get up. It's like a little toddler learning to walk. You have to keep encouraging them. You can do it, honey. Keep coming. Keep walking. Keep trying. You know, and as you see their face and the emotional mirroring that back, those mirror neurons are firing and wiring like Pete's talking about in therapy, that's what we're seeing and doing. And that therapeutic relationship is actually helping heal and reinforce that positive network for lasting anchoring change, which is really exciting. So makes it easier, I think, for us to do our own personal things when we can see our clients doing it. I have no excuses.
See how
I have
far
to,
someone
yeah, I need to model. I need to, you know, model what I'm preaching. So definitely is motivating me to really be more engaged every day at all my own personal goals. You know, when I think about it.
Definitely, definitely. Mm-hmm. So I think that maybe the core message that all of us are saying, just to kind of reiterate it, take the small steps. You know, find some people that are wanting to support you, right? You have people in your life that are wanting you to succeed. If not, right, you can find other people that are trying to accomplish those goals too. They're all over, right? All of us are trying to improve or grow in some way. And that support really helps. Be aware that there's going to be times that you're going to fail. And that's okay, because whenever you fail, you get to learn some of these roadblocks and you get to figure out different ways around them. Take those small steps and know that you are built to change. Mm-hmm. Even though you're built to resist it, you are built to change. And staying in one place and staying where you're at, if you want to do that, that's fine. But I think most of us really want to, you know, we want to be better. And being better takes one small step at a time. And we get used to it. And all of a sudden it becomes easier and easier and easier. You just got to take that one step every day.
Yeah, I like to think of being realistic. So the acronym I use frequently is what we'll call SMART: specific, measurable, achievable, results, and time-oriented. Mm-hmm. So we're realistic and time-oriented. And I think when you break them down into that, those categories, and you add the support piece, you really can make change in your life.
Definitely. And I think the reflection piece is really important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right, about what's working, what's not working, those kind of things. So I hope that you guys have found this episode helpful. I think that, I know, like me personally, I think like I told you guys, I found myself enjoying the conversation more than I maybe thought that I would have. And maybe that is just because we get to see it so often. And so next time that we talk, it's also a nice little break. We didn't really specifically talk about trauma this time, but I was thinking that there's so much overlay in this. Yep. And none of us really called it out. So I'm really curious if any of our listeners kind of picked up on that too. So again, thank you guys for joining us for this episode, and we look forward to talking to you guys next time. Thank you for listening to our show. This podcast is designed to provide accurate and reliable information, and those that appear on the show are all licensed professionals in the area of mental health counseling. We are in no way rendering legal or medical advice, only information to help serve you better in making decisions in your life. If you need a professional, you should find one. music you are listening to is called Lobby Time, and that is by Kevin MacLeod and licensed through Creative Commons.